the high desert of northern New Mexico, this is Circle for Original Thinking. I am your host, Glenn Aparicio Perry. Welcome to Circle for Original Thinking, America's electronic talking circle for visionary thinkers, an open forum for fresh ideas and timeless wisdom applied to today's political and ecological challenges. Each episode, we bring together creative thinkers from a variety of different traditions. We ask the hard questions on the important issues of the day, political polarization, climate change, virulent viruses, and other symptoms of humanity being out of balance with the natural world. Our goal is to recreate a whole and sacred America and world, a new and improved version of E Pluribus Unum, from the many to the one. And this time, not leave anybody out. Join us as we embark on this quest. Hello, I'm Glenn Aparicio Perry, and today's version of the Circle for Original Thinking podcast will be myself, without guests, because it's the time of year when people are praying for peace. We speak about peace on earth at this time, in December. And there's a lot of prayer for the return of the light, which is, when you get right down to it, the origin of all religious ceremonies around this time of year, whether it be Diwali or Hanukkah or Christmas too. But the world is very much not at peace at this time. We have war in Israel, we have war in Ukraine, we have wars in Africa, and it might seem hopeless to some people for praying for peace. They might have given up. And so the purpose of this podcast really is to offer a positive vision of the future, even as we are in the midst of seemingly intractable challenges, be they with other human beings and being ensnared in wars, in our human relationships, or with the natural world herself, the way that we've seemingly made war on nature. But there's a bigger picture view that I want to offer to my listeners in this session, which I hope you will find inspiring, because it happens that I'm writing a book called Original Love. I do believe that love is the answer to a lot of our problems, and not only love, because love alone can be misinterpreted and abused, very often has been. It's really more about respect, kinship, wisdom, compassion, and love that are called for in these times. And I want to share how I even came to write the book Original Love, because I had no plan to do so. And one morning, my wife, Tomoko, just announced, and she is never wont to do something like this, but she just announced one morning that you're going to write a book called Original Love. And frankly, I found that a little daunting at the time. But I took out my computer and started a folder called Original Love. And then I continued to write the book that I was writing then and really still in the early stages of doing, called Original Politics. And then a year later, I was in Taos, New Mexico, and I was speaking to a woman named Jean Ellis Sankari. And she was speaking to me about teaching at UNM Taos, where she taught at the time. And she interrupts herself in the middle of a sentence and says, "I just got a download. You're going to write a book called Original Love, and it's going to be the third book in a three-part series with original in the title. And I thought, wow, okay, that's a double confirmation from the universe. But the weird thing is, I had changed the title of Original Politics to Sacred Politics. And in fact, that's what I had just gotten a book deal with that title from Select Books to write the second book. But this clearly blew that out of the water, and I knew I needed to change the title back to Original Politics. And I got permission from Select Books to do that and did so. And as soon as I did that, the book Original Politics flowed better. And I got my own download for how to write the book Original Love, which is not so much a book about romantic love, but was a book about remembering our love for Mother Earth and remembering how we are radically interconnected with all there is. As Plato wisely said, love is the desire and pursuit of the whole. And I think he was right about that. So this book, Original Love, when I got the download for how to write that book, it's a book that the arc of the book is from wholeness, we go into separation, but we are returning to wholeness all along. It's also very Gebserian, if you know the Swiss philosopher Jean Gebser. It's going to trace the structures of consciousness, which he coined a very long time ago, before 1950, the archaic, the magical, the mythical, the mental, and the integral structures of consciousness. So the original structure of consciousness being the archaic is one where there's no separation at all from Mother Earth. So just imagine floating in a warm pool without a care in the world, being fed without moving a muscle. An endless supply of liquid nutrients just comes where it comes from. You do not know. There is no struggle, no need to hunt or forage. Nourishment is everywhere. Your eyes are not yet open, but you feel deep abiding peace, more than peace, love, original love. There's love within you, surrounding you, enfolding you. Warm love, sweet love, pure love. All is love, all is interconnected, all is whole. There is no other, there is no mother, at least not one you recognize, because there is no separation. There is only oneness, an undivided, complete oneness. That's how the beginning of Original Love starts. Because that is how I believe it was. When I wrote Original Thinking, I observed that the origin of the word thinking is thanking. And I found that to be true in seven languages: English, French, Dutch, Norse, Frisian, German, and Old Anglo-Saxon. I wonder, why would that be? And I think it's because originally all our thoughts were prayers. All our thoughts connected us to creation, as opposed to today, where thinking often separates ourselves into our own private bubble. So that's really the way that the archaic was. Everything, even the word thinking doesn't even emerge in the archaic. Undoubtedly emerges much later, but still it evokes that same feeling that came in the archaic when there was just an inextricable connection of the whole, so much so that you couldn't even notice any boundary whatsoever. But then something happened. Obviously, the Bible speaks about the fall of man. But one of my favorite stories, which is told through Plato and Socrates in Plato's Symposium, talks about the separation of the sexes. Speaks about how originally all humans were double sex beings within a single body. And we were double of everything. We had four arms, four legs. We only had one head, but two faces. And like Janus face, one direction, one face, the other direction. We had two sets of genitalia, and we had either most of these beings had were both male and female, but some of them were female or male, which explains same-sex attraction later on, because in the story, according to Plato, told through Aristophanes, these beings were so powerful, they could move very fast, because they could not just walk upright, they could do cartwheels and move super fast, and they were beginning to be considered by the gods as a great challenge. So the gods decided that they would cut them in half like a flatfish. And then after that, what happened was really sad, because the gods did do that. They cut them in half like a flatfish, and the people just clung to their other half. If it was a man cut apart from a woman, they would just hug. They would not eat, they would not sleep, and they would die. And then the gods took pity upon them, and they decided to rearrange their genitalia so they could have sexual intercourse and while hugging, and that they could also perpetuate the species. I mean, the old story goes that even before they did that, that human beings reproduce just like cicadas or something, by casting their, you know, on the ground. You know, it's a pretty interesting. And a lot of people may think this story is preposterous, but there are obviously animals today that are alive with both male and female parts. You have trees that have male and female branches. It's not an unheard concept in nature. But whether we believe the story or not is immaterial. There's something compelling about it, because this whole concept of having twin flames or missing your other half has been at the root of centuries and centuries of literature. And there just seems to be something to it. And that's really all I would, you know, say that is important at this point. But the other reason that I'm very optimistic, there's a lot of reasons that I'm optimistic, but is when you look back to the archaic period, and then we come into the magical period, which is just something that still prevails today in our psyches. Why do we watch Harry Potter and, you know, Lord of the Rings and all these amazing magicals, whether it's Star Wars, Star Trek, all these kinds of things that we watch? It's because the magical consciousness is still within us, and so is mythical consciousness. And there's reason to believe that in the beginning of the mythical era, it was goddesses who were worshipped. The anthropological evidence shows that it was female figurines that were the ones that were in predominance. Figures with large hips, figures that accented the reproductive capacities of women. So the large hips, the large breasts, the sacred triangle, or, you know, representing the vulva, is not a sexual image, actually. These images, even the vulva, is like a opening to a portal, really, that opens to other dimensions, in tune with perhaps even as far as what was later discovered, the center of the Milky Way is where there's a black hole. That could be the womb of our galaxy. Women were known as their personal, the female body was the best way to access the beyond personal, the archetypal, the larger whole. And there's reason to believe that the first ceremonies were based on this. I mean, the very word ritual, comes from the Sanskrit word ritu, and it means menses. So there's reason to believe that women's periodic bleeding may have been the very first rituals that were ever celebrated by human beings. And that would make sense to me, that that's why goddess cultures would predominate. And goddess cultures were very holistic. They were very holistic. It might seem incredible to people today, but the feminine principle included the masculine. And why couldn't it? Because after all, we all come from women. We were all born from a womb that was held within a woman. And whether we're female or male, we still come through that womb. So why wouldn't the feminine principle possibly include the masculine and allow for more balanced, holistic energies? And that seems to be the way it was in this ancient golden age, where there was no evidence of war whatsoever. And all that starts to break down when we move into the patriarchal age, where Aryan and Semitic invaders come into Sumerian cultures in Mesopotamia. And things shift. I mean, the practice of sacrifice, which was originally done only for the whole of the overall community, now becomes aligned with the ritual sacrifice involved in war. The holistic concepts of light and dark, these goddesses like Inanna and Ishtar, Astarte, these are all names, and it could be Native American names, Pachamama. These are all names of goddess figures that represented the whole. They included everything. They included everything. And there wasn't the hard and fast separation between lightness and darkness, good and evil. That comes about later. That comes about with war coming in. And then we have the battles between light and darkness. Dirt becomes dirty. The underworld always existed. And there were always challenges in the underworld. But the concept of hell and death as absolute, that is a emergent concept. So the underworld actually becomes hell. Hades, even in the ancient Greek times, is a symbol of wholeness, not a symbol of evil, not at all. So with the devaluing of the earth, we have the concomitant devaluing of the feminine principle and feminine ways of knowing, herbology. I mean, that leads in, without going into it, I mean, that led into, you know, something that happened, of course, in the burning times when women were killed. Now, before the burning times, both witches and warlocks were killed equally. But during the burning times, women are killed 10 times more frequently than warlocks. And so obviously the principle of the feminine had been devalued. And what emerged is this age of heroes, the Greco-Roman myths, and that predominated in the more patriarchal age. But those are still very holistic, very valuable myths, because even if you have a starker separation between light and dark, you still have day. You have the whole day. So, okay. Now, why is this optimistic? It's optimistic because I believe that it's fairly obvious and been predicted by a lot of prophecies that we are in the reemergence of the feminine. According to the Mayan calendar, that would have begun around 2011, 2012. But it's obviously going to begin very slowly. But there is a reemergence of the feminine underway before our eyes. And it never really left. You know, the energies of the feminine are always within us. The energies of our archaic and our magical selves and our mythical selves are always within us. Yes, we went into the mental age, and at first, the mental age was a beautiful thing, and it was actually all about beauty. It was all about divine proportionality. And that is what Jean Gibser would refer to as the efficient mental. So at that time, mental prowess was about being beautiful. There was no science yet in the way that we think about it today. There was the word science, but it only comes from the ancient Latin scientia, meaning to know. They were called natural, but there weren't scientists. That's a 19th century word. But people who were exploring the beauty of the cosmos were known as natural philosophers. They happen to cover a lot of the same ground that we attribute to scientists today, but they also included the arts. They included the arts very much so. So a figure like Leonardo da Vinci, who's both an artist and later thought of as a scientist, that's really not as unusual as people think. It's not like da Vinci was a unicorn that stood out. He was the only one that was doing that. Actually, everybody was doing that to some degree. He just happened to be a little bit, and to excel at it in such a way that he became famous later on. But when you hear the phrase, you know, he's a Da Vinci or something, meaning he's a unicorn, that's so unusual to be both an artist and a scientist. Well, everybody was back then. But we've continued going on to, and it was a beautiful thing in a lot of ways, the advent of the mental realm allowed us to have closer prediction and control, and the birth of modern science, which has been remarkable in a lot of ways. But we've gone to the stage, and I would start counting it ever since 1945, when we exploded atom bombs, where we had disconnected ourselves from the wisdom behind our inventions, and we brought into the world something deeply destructive that could, in fact, destroy us all. And it's long overdue to return to some of the same principles that were used in Native America, where women's councils would work side by side with men's councils, and women's councils would be the wisdom council that would then provide the strategic vision for the whole tribe. And it would be the women who would nominate the male chiefs who sat in council, and the council would then be enacting the vision of the women on behalf of the men and the whole tribe. That's actually a beautiful marriage of female and male energy. Us men were good at getting things done, but sometimes we need direction. So women who are associated with, from antiquity, associated with the natural rhythms, they're the conduit to the sacred rhythms of nature. That is why, in my view, that's really what wisdom is about. Wisdom is not about having a storehouse of knowledge. Wisdom is about being in tune with the natural rhythms so that you already know what is unfolding, and you simply are aligning the society to unfold with you. So that, in fact, is wisdom. I mean, it seems to me. So we have developed a lot of science, a lot of technologies, which are spin-offs from the scientific inventions. And some of that has benefited us, but some of it, as I mentioned before, is potentially tremendously harmful, such as nuclear bombs. But also just some of the inventions, the fossil fuel industry, have begun to destroy the earth to such a point that it's now really necessary to recover some of that ancient wisdom. Think about the story from the mythical age of Eros and Psyche, And when Psyche is given these tasks, I mean, the first one is to separate the out the wheat from the chaff or something. She ends up being enlisting the help of ants to do that. Another one is to recover the fleece from rams. She gets advice from a reed on the water, and the reed tells her that she should not confront the rams directly, because, you know, if you think about it, the ram is about the symbol of masculine powers you can have. Two rams ramming together is not something you want to be in the middle of. So she is advised very wisely to approach where the rams are at the dark, under the dark of night, when the rams are sleeping, and to come up to the trees and to get the fleece from where they rubbed against the trees. So she recovers that. So this kind of wisdom from her archetypal myths, these great myths, are what is needed today. We need to recover a balance of the feminine and the masculine. But I think it's happening for some time. What we think of as rational and predictable science is all breaking down. It's all breaking down you can see it even in the art world. Like, it used to be that with linear perspective in art, we called that realism. But then we had the impressionists and the cubists. And so that's starting to break down what we see as real. But in the same way, we're also our rational minds are no longer agreeing on a common set of facts. We see that in our politics. We see that in the way that politics is being covered by our media. We have an open decay. Now, again, you said, I said we're going to be optimistic. But this is optimistic because we have to break down before we can break through. One of the geniuses of Gebser's philosophy, when he was talking about the archaic, the magical, the mythical, the mental, and the integral, is that he realized that at each stage of the process, as each structure of consciousness emerged, it would emerge in a very efficient way, but then it would degrade into a devolved or deficient way. And that is what would give a opening for a birth of a new structure of consciousness, which does not eradicate or make obsolete the old structures. They're still there. They're still within us. And when we're talking about the future, we're talking about an integral way of thinking in which we're going to recover those beautiful aspects of consciousness, going back to the very holistic feminine ways, going back to the very holistic magical ways, going back to the holistic stories that we've heard, and now going to the holistic way of thinking with our minds that is connected with beauty, connected with the arts, connected with divine proportionality, and dynamic balance, moving together so that we can utilize the best of the feminine together with the best of the masculine, because there are beautiful aspects to masculine consciousness, not just defending and protecting, although that's one aspect of masculine consciousness, but also the what we tend to call the masculine, about initiating, exploring. Those are beautiful too when done in appropriate balance, you know. So it's time to pause toxic masculinity, having world leaders arguing over who has a bigger nuclear button and things like that. But there's still always an opening for creative exploration. And when I say masculine, please understand it. Every single human being has masculine and feminine qualities within them. It's not just men who have masculine qualities. Of course, women have masculine qualities. It's not just women who have feminine qualities. Men have feminine qualities. What we need is a balance and an acceptance and an inclusion. This is one of the most beautiful things that I've ever learned from Native America, but not just Native American. I mean, there are Western men like David Bohm who understood that dialogue was about being inclusive, about listening for the purpose of understanding rather than just readying your reply. So being increasingly inclusive, interconnected, and whole, being of unity and diversity, this is what I see as the sacred purpose of the United States and, in fact, all over the world. And so this was the origin of the podcast, Circle for Original Thinking. Being inclusive, interconnected, and whole, and being a model of the sacred unity and diversity, and being a model of what they said in the beginning of the United States, e pluribus unum, out of the many, one, but this time not leaving anything out. This is happening. It might seem confusing, and because quite frankly, we are in a confusing time. We're in a transition where the mental is breaking down. And so we're in an increasingly fragmented world. We have artificial intelligence coming in that's exacerbating that. It's making it harder and harder for people to know what is true. But there's a positive side to that, too. With social media, we have people all over the world that are now communicating. And let's not leave out of the fact that there's a few wonderful introduction of cute cat videos. No, I'm just kidding. Well, maybe I'm not totally kidding, because, you know, one thing I've noticed about the web that's positive is I've never seen so much depiction of interspecies communication and interspecies love. And I think we're actually in the early stages, but there is an increase in love, and it's coming through in a way that's evoking our higher intuition. It's recovering the best of our archaic, magical, mythical, and mental world. We are going to be okay. It may not all happen in our lifetimes, but have faith. I have never seen anything good come about by adopting a negative attitude, because that will surely bring about the negative results. Maintain your positivity. Water the seeds you want to see grow in the world. And not just water them. Give them light. Give them air. And give them fertile soil to grow. And then, my friends, I know that we will begin to flower. We will begin to open our hearts in greater and greater love. We will begin to listen deeply to people who are different than us and invite them to tell their story. Everyone has a story. We will begin to include them in our circle. And that's really the purpose of the Circle for Original Thinking. Thank you for listening. Much love and blessings to all. And have a beautiful, beautiful holiday season. Aho mitaku yasen. This program is made possible in part by Select Books, Waterside Publications, Bizgenics, and the Ecology Prime Media Channel. Executive producer Kenichi Sugihara. Native flute music by Orlando Secatero from the Pathways CD. Liberty song by artist Ron Crowder, written by Ron Crowder, Jim Casey, and Danny Casey. Post-production editing by Kenichi Sugihara. The Circle for Original Thinking is a grassroots think tank whose mission is to seek out the deep origins of contemporary thought in order to remember and restore heart-centered wisdom for humanity and all our relations on Earth. Follow this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Listen Notes, or wherever podcasts are heard. For more information, go to originalthinking.us or originalpolitics.us. And you can also find and purchase my books, Original Thinking and Original Politics, there. Thank you for listening, and until next week, many blessings of good health and well-being to you.